Bonjour, good day. Hello everyone, welcome. Merci et bienvenue. My name is Will Stry, I'm the director of the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada, otherwise and henceforth today known as MISC. And I feel very privileged to be here today as the Institute celebrates its 20th anniversary. Il me fait grand plaisir de vous accueillir aujourd'hui au nom de l'Institut alors que l'Institut célèbre son 20th anniversary, and we're celebrating with a large public education event, a symposium that we've called Canada Remix, in which we ask the question, how might we remix Canada? Aujourd'hui, nous avons réuni des Canadiens fascinants de divers milieux, incluant la politique, les arts, l'activisme et les médias, pour poser la question, comment pouvons-nous remixer le Canada? And we'll be discussing what we need to do to ensure the future development of our democracy. What can we do to improve the quality of our civic life? And we'll be discussing whether we, as Canadians, get the information we need. But before we go any further, there are some people that I want and am delighted to thank. First of all, I want to thank three gentlemen without whom we would not be here today. The first two are MISC's founding co-chairs, Mr. Charles R. Bronfman and Mr. Alex K. Patterson, both of whom are with us here today, and whose wisdom and foresight in founding MISC have sustained the institution for the past 20 years. Gentlemen, thank you. The other gentleman I wish to thank is MISC founding director and Hiram Mills Professor Emeritus Desmond Morton, who is here tonight with his wife Gail Eaton. Desmond's dedication to MISC and its mission have shaped the Institute since its earliest days, and his love for teaching continues to inspire new generations of students at MISC every year, as I witness on a yearly basis. I'd also like to thank Professor Suzanne Morton from the Department of History and Classical Studies, who served as MISC's acting director from January to June of this year while I was away on sabbatical leave, and she did a great deal to organize this event. And, of course, former MISC director Antonia Maione, who is joining us today as a moderator for our second panel discussion. So, in fact, all MISC directors are among us today, but I'd particularly, at this point, like to acknowledge you, Antonia. Where are you? And my thanks to MISC's Board of Trustees, especially our former board co-chairs, Denise Chong and Lily de Grandpré, as well as our new, well, before I name the new ones, I'd like to offer a special thanks to Lily and Denise, who conceived this idea, brought it to fruition, and have been incredible, incredible supporters working hard for MISC for many, many, many years. So. And our new co-chairs of the board, Ann Dadson and Michael Goldblum, both of whom are here today as well. And, very importantly, the great team I work with here at MISC for all they have done to make this event possible. Adriana, Petros, Liz, Mercedes, Jessica, Joanne Bilodeau, who is in the principal's office these days, but who has been part of this from the very beginning. So thanks to you.
L'Institut d'études sur le Canada est une institution unique au Canada. Nos étudiants de premier cycle sont hors pair et plusieurs d'entre eux poursuivent des réalisations fantastiques après leur temps avec nous. Nos événements d'éducation publique, comme celui-ci, rassemblent des individus fascinants pour discuter et débattre des grandes questions auxquelles notre pays fait face. Le travail de nos visiteurs et de nos stagiaires postdoctoraux font de nous une institution de recherche de première classe. We've got a lot of content to get to this afternoon, so I'll just end by saying that we're live streaming this event to viewers across Canada and the universe. You can view the link on the front page of your program, and we're also tweeting the entire conference en anglais et en français, and you can follow us using the hashtag Canada Remix, which is you can see on the screen and is on your program as well. And we will be taking audience questions for all of our speakers via Twitter using the Canada Remix hashtag. So please pose your questions there. We've got great events coming up at MISC,
You've got literature available out front, and of course you can see the details for both lectures and other events, both of our upcoming lectures, on our website, www.mcgill.ca/MIST. Without further ado, though, permettez-moi de vous présenter la principale de l'Université McGill, Suzanne Fortier, who will introduce this afternoon's keynote speaker. Principal Fortier, bienvenue.
Merci, Professeur Stra. Bonjour et bienvenue à vous tous. Merci d'être venus en grand nombre pour célébrer avec nous le 20e anniversaire de l'Institut des études canadiennes de McGill. Welcome to this very important event, and thank you so much for being here for a celebration of the great work that has gone on at MISC for the last 20 years. C'est vraiment un honneur et un privilège pour moi d'être ici, mais aussi d'avoir participé au cours de la dernière année aux activités de MISC et d'avoir pu mieux apprendre le travail exceptionnel qui se fait dans l'Institut. Comme vous savez, outre l'enseignement et la recherche, l'une des grandes forces de l'Institut d'études canadiennes est sa capacité de nouer des liens avec la communauté. Et en fait, MISC conferences and lectures, such as today's symposiums, are important opportunities for open, non-partisan dialogue connecting people from different perspectives and different backgrounds. I would like also to give my words of appreciation for the two co-founders of the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada, Charles Bruntman and Alec Patterson. Like good parents, they left a very strong DNA identity in MISC, a strong vision that was one of creating an institute that would study our country, that would make sure that these studies would contribute to building the future of our country, and that these studies would be extended to interactions with the broader Canadian society. So, merci beaucoup à Charles et Alec pour cette contribution exceptionnelle à l'Institut des études canadiennes et à McGill. Merci. Et sans plus tarder, permettez-moi de vous présenter notre premier invité qui prononcera le discours intitulé Disaster and Community. Calgary Mayor Naheed Nanshi grew up in Calgary, but has lived and worked in cities around the world before returning to his hometown. He was Canada's first tenured professor in the field of nonprofit management at the Montreal University's Bissett School of Business, and also an advisor to corporate leaders in Canada and the U.S. During the floods that overwhelmed Calgary in 2013, when the Bow and Elbow Rivers overflowed, Mayor Nanshi became a leader for Calgary's citizens in press conferences, in one-on-one meetings with Calgarians, and on social media, where he was dubbed Super Nanshi. Indeed, Mayor Nanshi went for days with little sleep while working to handle the crisis for the benefit of all of the citizens of his city. Mayor Nanshi.
I wish I could be there in person today, but we'll have to deal with technology, and you'll have to see my face very, very large. I usually spend my days sitting in front of flags and, you know, talking to computers, so this is fascinating for me. Let me start out by saying, Maya Del Sale, happy birthday to the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada. Thank you for 20 years of doing magnificent work, helping us understand our nation better. Today, in this Canada Remix conversation, I'm not sure I have a lot of insightful things to add to such a distinguished audience thinking about the future of our nation. Truth be told, you heard that I'm an academic by profession, and I was a professor. I'm a lousy researcher. I just like to tell stories. That got me where I needed to be anyway. But today, what I want to do with all of you today is just tell you a story. I want to tell you a story about last summer. a story about a week in my life, a week in the life of our nation, and what that week told us about who we are as a community, what we do, and what makes our community strong. And really, I think it's a story about Canada. It's a story of what we've managed to create here together as Canadians, and what, when we have our partisan battles and our academic arguments, we can never forget about who we are together as a community. So, we'll see if the technology works for us. There we are. June 2013. I am in Ottawa. I am speaking to a number of groups in our nation's capital, particularly to large groups, including many folks from the federal government. And I use my favorite line when I talk about the federal government, which is funnier because it's true. I never really can remember what it is that the federal government does. The last time I said that, someone yelled out in the audience, "The post office." Okay. You know, defense, obviously, and international stuff. But as I tell this story, you will learn that I certainly learned one important thing that the federal government does, and that is when you have a natural disaster, they send in the army, and that is tremendously helpful. But I was in Ottawa, and then I flew to Toronto. Now, when I made it to Toronto, I was picked up at the airport by a very good friend of mine, a woman called Allison Lopes. Allison, by the way, has recently written a book called Tragedy in the Commons. If you haven't read it, you must read it. It's a horror story. It's a frightening horror story about our federal government and about civic engagement in our government. But that night, we weren't talking as academics or as an author and a fan. It actually turned out that I had arranged my trip to Ottawa and Toronto, where I was doing lots of public sessions, to coincide so that I could finish my public sessions on Friday night and then head out to St. Catharines, Ontario for Allison's wedding. And she picked me up from the airport, and I said to her, "Allison, I cannot believe that 3 days before your wedding, you have time to come and pick me up from the airport and take me for dinner." And she said, "Nahid, I cannot believe with your schedule that you actually are able to attend my wedding." And I said, "Allison, nothing on earth could prevent me from attending your wedding." And at that exact moment, upstream of Calgary in a town called Canmore, the rain started to fall. By the way, this spring, Calgary was probably the only place in Canada that did not greet the end of the ridiculous winter we had with unbridled enthusiasm. People were a little bit nervous about what the spring rains might bring. And at that moment, while Calgary was all nervous about another flood, Allison sends me a photo of her brand new baby, Alec. And I said, "Congratulations, except I don't know how I feel about milestones in your life." Luckily, everything worked out fine. The rain began to fall. The next morning, I was giving a breakfast speech. I hate giving breakfast speeches in downtown Toronto. And my chief of staff, who had been traveling with me, and he rarely does, well, he has a terrible habit. And his terrible habit is that he is never present with you in the conversation. Luckily, he's got a giant brain, but you only get half of it at a time, because half of it is with you and the other half is on his mobile device trying to figure out what else is going on in the world. And so he was sitting in the front row at my breakfast speech and never once looked up. He was on his phone the entire time. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm giving a pretty brilliant speech here. You should be paying more attention. And then it occurred to me that it was only 6 o'clock in the morning in Calgary. Who in the world was he talking to, and why did he keep getting up and taking phone calls? And when I finished my speech, he pulled me off to the side and he said, "We have a problem. See, the geography of Calgary is such that our two rivers, the Bow and the Elbow River, which meet just behind City Hall where I'm sitting right now, and yes, I know it's funny that they're called the Bow and Elbow Rivers, are very close to their headwaters. So unlike in a place like Manitoba, where you can see the flood coming and you may have days to prepare, in Calgary you'll never have days to prepare. If the rivers crest at their headwaters, they're within Calgary, they're to Calgary within a matter of hours. And so we knew this was happening. Cadmore had already been devastated. The water was on its way to Calgary. And as near as we could figure, the water would be approximately 7 times the size of our last flooding event in 2005. So from that place in Toronto, I declared a state of local emergency. We agreed to evacuate nearly 100,000 people from their homes. We turned off the electrical power to great swaths of the city in preparation for what was about to happen. We protected critical infrastructure and private property with sandbags as best we could. And we waited. Just because of the crowd that I'm talking to, I'll pause and tell you about that state of local emergency for a moment. It was the first time in Calgary's history we'd ever declared such a thing. And it provides the city with extraordinary powers. The power to conscript people into service, the power to set prices, the power to confiscate private property. And just again, because of this crowd, I'll tell you technically it's very interesting. When we sign a state of local emergency, those powers devolve to the mayor. And by convention, the mayor immediately signs a second piece of paper devolving those powers to the director of emergency management. Why do we do that? Because the director of emergency management is a civil servant. If he screws up, he can be accountable, he can be fired. I probably don't need to tell people in Montreal that if the mayor screws up, you're stuck with him. Not that your current mayor ever would. So it's a good governance thing, and it really talks about how we work as a community and our government works well, and I'm going to come back to that point in just a moment. But the funny part of all of this is I've got a wonderful staff here, mostly younger people, and my young communications advisor about a week into the event said, "This state of local emergency is crazy, Mayor." And I said, "How do you mean?" And he goes, it's just like when they declared the War Measures Act." And I said, "Well, I'm glad you paid attention in your social studies classes, because we did declare the War Measures Act. That's what it's called now." So we're getting something good in Canadian education. Nonetheless, I got to Calgary late on that Thursday night and assessed the damage to the city. I took this picture on Friday. I was in a helicopter. I didn't even have time to think about, ooh, I'm in a helicopter. I wanted to show you this picture for a couple of reasons. Number one is what you're looking at is the Bow River. The Bow River, as I said, is one of two rivers that flow through Calgary. On a normal day in June, the Bow River runs pretty high. It can be at about 200 or 300 cubic meters per second. What you're looking at right now is the Bow River running at nearly 2,200 cubic meters per second. The other river in Calgary, the Elbow River, is controlled by a dam. And so it's very, very placid. One of the favorite things of Calgarians to do in the summer is to get on an air mattress and float down the Elbow River. On a June day, it would normally run at 25 or 30 cubic meters per second. At the time I took this photo, instead of 25 or 30 cubic meters per second, it was running at 700. So on the top of your screen, you see the south bank of the Bow River. That's the community of Bowness. Those beautiful Venetian canals you see used to be roads. Those patches of trees you see, well, those used to be people's houses. But the real reason I show you this picture is not to show you the top of the screen, but actually for you to take a look at the bottom of the screen. That's the north bank of the Bow River, the community of Montgomery. And you'll notice in Montgomery, the streets are dry. There's not a drop of water in the basements. Folks, that's nature. No matter how sophisticated we are, no matter how modern we think we are as a community in our great cities in this nation, that's nature. One side of the Bow River, you're underwater. The other bank of the river, you're high and dry. And these are things that we cannot control. The floods of 2013 in southern Alberta were the most expensive natural disaster in Canadian history. $6 billion+ worth of damage. In the city of Calgary alone, damage to public infrastructure was more than $500 million. To give you some context for that, the $6 billion that we're spending on disaster recovery in southern Alberta would double my rapid transit network, would double the train network in Calgary. So these are big, huge numbers. Now, we were lucky in one way, and we were lucky that the water receded very, very quickly. This was Friday. By Saturday, we were starting to see what those roads looked like as the water came back and what the damage was. And we came to an interesting question, which was, because the power had been turned off, because there had been damage to the homes, traditional disaster management work would tell you that every single one of those homes needed to be inspected before people could go home. But we also understood the very human need for people to see their house, to see what kind of damage was there, to make short and long-term plans for themselves and their families. And we decided that we could rely upon one very important treatise, one very important philosophy that too many governments have forgotten, which is in fact my core political philosophy. People always ask me, are you left-wing or right-wing? What do you stand for? And I always say, I only have one core political philosophy. And my core political philosophy is, people aren't stupid. I know that's kind of shocking for people who follow our provincial and federal governments. Citizens aren't stupid. Citizens can be trusted to join into the conversation, and above all, citizens can be trusted to do the right thing. So that informed all of the communications we did during the flood. I made a simple rule, which was that if we knew something, everyone knew what we knew. Unless there was a compelling public safety reason to hold back information, we never would. And we never did, by the way. So using that same philosophy, we said, you know, people can be trusted to do the right thing. So we said to 35,000 people, you know what? You can go home now. But you need to help us. You need to follow a few basic rules. Don't go straight home. Go to your local community center first. They'll give you a checklist and some supplies. When you get to your street, if there's water on the road, don't go any further. When you get to your house, if there's water on the walkway, don't go any further. When you open your house door, if there's water on the main floor, don't go in. If you're inside your house and you realize that there's evidence that there's been water in the basement above the level of the lowest electrical outlet, don't go any further. And go back to the community center and we'll help you. If all of those things are clear, start the work of cleanup, put a sign in your window that says need heat, need power, need gas, and we will try and get to you as quickly as we can. And in one fell swoop, with one decision, we created 35,000 home inspectors. And people were able to go back to their houses and start to get on with their lives. And there was a lot to get on with. Scenes like this were very common throughout the whole city. And I want you to look at this picture a little bit critically. It looks like a big pile of trash on the lawn in front of someone's house. And I guess that's what it is. A big pile of trash in front of a really nice home in a really nice neighborhood. But when we look more closely, well, that trash, it's your kids' report cards. It's their artwork. It's your family photo albums. It's that couch that you saw in a catalog and you scrimped and saved for because you wanted exactly that couch for your living room. It's your life. And it's your life sitting out on the lawn in full view of the world, waiting for my colleagues who drive the garbage trucks to come and take it away. And to me, that's an important leadership lesson. When you're in a position like I'm in, you make decisions that impact lots of people every day. But you have to remember that every one of those people is a human being with a fully formed life. And the decisions we make impact those lives in every single way, every single day. So, we learned two big lessons out of the flood. And the first lesson is that we are incredibly blessed as Canadians, to live in a place where government works. Where dedicated public servants go to work every single day to keep us safe and to make our communities better. And during this crisis, Man, was I ever reminded of that. As much fun as I make of the other orders of government, the federal government was right there, and particularly the women and men of the Canadian Forces made a huge difference for us. The provincial government did their part with environment, with funding, with Alberta Health Services, and so on. But if I may, I've got 20,000 colleagues at the City of Calgary. They drive buses. They keep our water safe. By the way, the most dangerous job during the flood was at the water treatment plant, which is next to the river. Those people were risking their lives to protect the quality of our water supply. And by the way, we never had a boil water advisory during this flood. My colleagues are first on the scene when there's an emergency, police officers and firefighters. And they build roads, as you can see here. This is a crew of city staff and private contractors working to repair our LRT system. You may have seen pictures of the tracks going into this particular tunnel during the flood. It looked like a roller coaster. The Calgary Stampede was starting exactly 2 weeks later. The train had to be working. They managed to fix the train, the entire track system, and bring it back to life in 1 week. The road they're standing in front of is McLeod Trail, which is a major thoroughfare for the City of Calgary. It had a giant sinkhole in the middle of it. They rebuilt a new McLeod Trail in 1 day. Now, I should say that these construction timelines did lead me to a very important question. If you can fix it in 1 day, the answer they keep coming up with is, we didn't have to do public engagement, Your Worship. Probably more about, we didn't have to worry about the budget as much, Your Worship. But in any case, we were so lucky, and I will tell you one thing. The line that I use when I talk about the flood in Calgary that gets more applause than anything else is when I say, God bless the garbage men. Driving those giant trucks, 16, 17, 18, 19 hours a day, men and women, up and down those flood-impacted streets, just trying to bring a bit of cleanliness, a bit of normalcy back to the community, and how important that work that we never ever think about unless our garbage doesn't get picked up is every single day. But I also know that none of my colleagues in the public service will particularly begrudge me for saying that our job as public service is made so much easier by the quality of the public whom we serve. And that's really what I'm going to spend the rest of my time with you on. When the crisis hit, and I flew back from Toronto, I walked into the Emergency Operations Center of the City of Calgary. Imagine every movie you've ever seen about NASA and what mission control looks like. A wall of video monitors, a million cubicles in front. You can smell the adrenaline, the passion, and the drive. It's like a giant game of whack-a-mole. People are jumping up in their podiums, in their cubicles, saying things like, I need to evacuate a building in Chinatown. And the police will jump up and say, I can have officers there in 5 minutes. And Calgary Transit will jump up and say, I can get a bus there in 10. And emergency social services will jump up and say, it might be hard to get Chinese translators in the middle of the night, but give me a half hour. And someone across the room will jump up and say, I speak Cantonese, let me go. So it's this amazing system, it's government at its absolute best. But very quickly, in the middle of all of that, I started to get calls and tweets and emails from regular Calgarians saying, you know what, Mayor? My basement's dry. I haven't seen a drop of water. Remember, even at its peak, the flood only impacted about 15% of the land area of Calgary. And people would say, my place is dry. What can I do? How can I help? So in the middle of that controlled chaos at the Emergency Operations Center, I pulled aside a few of my colleagues at the City of Calgary and I said, step away from this. Your job is to manage the volunteer response. How are we going to get people who want to help helping? And bless their souls, I do love my colleagues, but sometimes public servants can get a little bit, well, public servant-y. And they immediately started getting nervous. What about liability? What if someone hurts themselves? How do we transport people? And they started fighting and fighting and fighting about all of this stuff. And they really couldn't come down to a conclusion of what we were going to do about all these volunteers that we knew were going to come. And I left the Emergency Operations Center in the wee hours of the morning on Sunday night, Monday morning, to try and get a little bit of sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, my radio went off and I heard an announcement. If you'd like to volunteer, the City of Calgary is inviting you to meet at McMahon Stadium in 2 hours' time. And you can imagine, I sat up in bed and said, how'd that happen? And so I phoned and asked, what did you guys do here? And they said, well, Your Worship, after you left last night, we figured we had to do something, we had to get started, so we just decided we would have people meet at McMahon Stadium. And I said, well, that's great, but were you planning on telling anyone? You've only given them 2 hours' notice on a Monday morning. Who's going to show up? And they said, well, Your Worship, that's actually on purpose, because we don't know what we're doing. And we figure that if a couple hundred people show up today, we'll figure out what we're doing and we'll be ready for a bigger crowd tomorrow. And I rolled my eyes as I do and I said, you know, you guys are dreaming. 200 people are not going to show up. 40 or 50 people are going to show up. But I guess I better go over there and say thank you to the folks. So I got dressed and made my way to McMahon Stadium, and of course, this is what I saw. Thousands and thousands of people in coveralls and steel-toed boots, in flip-flops and tank tops, all united by their desire to help strangers, people they didn't even know. There was no PA system. When I got there, one of my colleagues was standing on a folding table attempting to address the crowd. And then I had a brainstorm. I realized that the fire chief had loaned me a vehicle the day before so that I could get into the evacuated zones. And that vehicle had lights and sirens. By the way, he never asked for it back, which tells you a lot about asset management in the Calgary Fire Department. By the way, every time I tell that joke, the fire chief says, actually, it tells you more about the fact that nobody can walk up to the mayor and say, I want my car back. Anyway, I realized that because it had lights and sirens, it must have that thing you never want if you're driving late at night, which is the voice of God behind you. Pull over now. So I climbed up on that table, I leaned into the driver's side of the truck, I pulled out the little PA, and I started talking to people. And my colleague who had been up on the table before me said, Mayor, Mayor, send them home. We've run out of forms. Oh, you think I'm kidding? Look at the guy in the gray shirt right at the front. He's got one of the last forms. And so I took a deep breath, I stood up there, I looked out at this crowd, visions of municipal lawyers who are a very special breed danced in front of my eyes, and I said, okay folks, we've run out of forms. There's no more room on the buses, but you're here to help, and you want to help, so go help. Just go. You know what neighborhoods have been badly hit. Just go. And when you get there, it'll be very clear what you can do. You may have to go door to door. I bet you won't. Just go. Just go. And they did. They went. And what followed was the most remarkable outpouring of the power and the resilience of humanity that I have ever seen. If I were still an academic, and I keep reminding the people at Mount Royal University, I'm only on leave, I'm supposed to come back. But if I were still an academic, this would probably be the next 10 years of my research. How do people organize themselves in the lack of formal organization to do extraordinary things? How do everyday people doing everyday things with their everyday hands make extraordinary change in the world. We saw scenes like this throughout the city. Volunteers doing back-breaking, heavy-duty labor for people they didn't even know. This is my favorite photo. I love this photo for so many reasons. First of all, it shows you that the water that was in those basements was not crystal clean glacier water by the time it got to the basements. These people are dirty, they're sweaty, they stink. They actually have no idea whose house it is they're standing in front of. They just know it's someone who needed help and they've been in there for a couple days. Excuse me. They've learned more about ripping out drywall than I will ever know. And they're still smiling. The reason, though, that I love this photo the most is I'd like you to look at their hands. They're so filthy, but their hands are clean, and they're eating hamburgers. And it's the hamburgers that makes me love this photo. Because it reminds me that everyone in our community figured out how they could help. Whether they were doing the back-breaking labor or delivering food to the volunteers. Whether they were kids who put lemonade stands on what felt like every corner in the city, oh my God, I drank a lot of lemonade that week. Raising money for flood relief. Every single person figured out what they could do. This picture always reminds me of a woman that I call Sam's mother. Now, Sam's mom is a fully realized human being. Her name is Lori. She's a professional woman. I used to think she was a lawyer, but she was actually at a speech I gave recently and jumped up and said, "Teacher, teacher, I'm a fully realized human being. I'm not a lawyer." And I remember meeting her that night when she was thinking of herself as Sam's mom. I got into a habit. If I could escape from the emergency operations center for an hour or so at night, I would just go quietly walk in the flood-impacted neighborhoods. No hoopla, no drama, no media. I would just walk and talk to people about their experience and what had happened. I think leaders need to be able to understand human stories. And so one night I was walking and I met Sam's mom and she said to me, "You know, Mayor, I've lost everything in my house. We had 4 feet of water on the main floor. We stripped everything down to the studs. I don't have a stove. I don't have a fridge. I don't have cabinets. I don't have any way to prepare meals for my family. But you know what, Mayor? Tonight for dinner, we had hot shepherd's pie. And when I'm having a rough day, which happens once in a while in this job, I think about that shepherd's pie. I think about the hands that made it, that boiled and peeled and mashed the potatoes, that put the mixture into a casserole dish and quickly covered it with aluminum foil, and the mind that thought for a second, I am never going to see my casserole dish again. But that's okay, because this has to go out the door right now. Because somewhere out there, there's a family that hasn't had a hot meal in days, and I want them to get the shepherd's pie while it's hot. And I think about the hands that did that, and I realize where true power in our community comes from. I spent a lot of time, both as an academic as a politician, talking about civic engagement, about getting people more involved in their communities. I've launched a program that I encourage you all to check out and to steal called Three Things for Calgary, which is just a simple program to encourage that's why I wear this number 3 on my lapel, which just encourages every Calgarian every year to do 3 things for their community, whether they're little things like shoveling your neighbor's walk or big things like starting a new nonprofit. Every one of us, everyday people doing everyday things with their everyday hands, has the power to make change in our community. About a week later, I went back to Bowness. Bowness is the community you saw in the very first photo. That Venetian canal was a river is a street called Bow Crescent. And I went walking on Bow Crescent, and in the third house on Bow Crescent, just up from the Hextall Bridge in the new park, I ran into a family that I chatted with. They were back in their house. They were very happy to be back in their house. But I poked my head inside, and there was nothing there. It had been stripped down to the studs. I think they were sleeping on hammocks. that couple had found a piece of plywood in their basement. They had scrawled a message on that piece of plywood, and they had nailed it to the tree out front. And of everything I saw that week, all the things I never thought I would see in my life, the rivers running higher and faster and angrier than I had ever experienced, the devastation, the loss, the damage, the hamburgers, of all the things I saw that week, this sign is the one thing that I will never forget. Because to me, it encapsulates what happened during that crisis, but it also encapsulates why Canada works and what I hope you'll get a chance to talk about this afternoon. We lost some stuff. We gained a community. So as today you continue your discussions thinking about the last 20 years and you think about what makes this country work, and we listen to lots of academics and people on every side of the political spectrum debating and discussing everything from universal health care to equalization payments to the bilingual nature of our country and all those things that we talked about when I studied this stuff and we continue to talk about, I'd like you to remember that. That what makes Canada work is something very, very simple. And that is that sense of community. That's what I get to dedicate myself to every day. I'm so lucky that I have been given 7 years to fulfill a simple promise in our community. And that simple promise is that every single person in every single corner of this community, regardless of what they look like or where they came from, regardless of whom they worship or how they love, that every single person in this community has the opportunity right here, right now, to live a great Canadian life. That's the promise of this nation. That's what we work on every single day, and I hope that's what every one of you will recommit yourselves to working on. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mayor Nenshi. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay. We have a couple of questions from people who've tweeted them in. One is from someone named Liz Four. She said, what do you do differently as mayor now, having dealt with the 2013 floods?
Well, we learned, as I said, a fair number of things during the flooding. And really, the biggest thing that I learned was around how people can come to the table when we set the table for them, when we set expectations, like with Three Things for Calgary. So rather than answer the question of what do I do differently, because I think I'm still the same guy, I'll answer a slightly different question is, what can we do even better? And so the question I have for myself is, when you look at that photo of those people at McMahon Stadium, and you see that power of humanity that comes together during a crisis, how do we harness that same power to work on homelessness and poverty and environment and all of the other issues that we face every single day? So having started with that political philosophy that people are not stupid, how do we now harness that and use this incredible resource we have at our disposal? 30 million Canadians, 1.2 million of them live in my city. How do we use that talent to make our community better for everyone?
Thank you. Another question. I mean, what is there anything that you think we should change in the way cities are governed, the powers they have, the ways in which they're structured as a result of this experience? You don't have to.
I was told that we had a hard stop, and I wasn't able to go on and on and on and on. That is a whole other issue. But yes, obviously, in 1867, when we had the British North America Act, it was an act for a largely agrarian society. And now, of course, we are, despite our myths about canoes and polar bears and pine trees, we are one of the most urban nations in the world. And as a result, cities have to do incredibly difficult work every single day that we simply don't have the resources or the power to manage. I was only half joking when I said I don't know what it is the federal government does. The vast majority of what the federal government does is write checks. If we actually counted the number of people in Ottawa who just wrote checks, you'd end up with the vast majority of the public service. So we've had a mismatch between our resources and the services that we have to provide. I often joke and say, look, if the federal government disappeared while we were in this room together, it'd probably be a week or two before anyone noticed. You'd stop getting your mail, probably. If your provincial government disappeared, you'd notice pretty quick because you're at a university, but it might be an hour or two before you had a real impact. If your municipal government disappeared, even in Montreal, if your municipal governments, actually you should say municipal governments because you have, I don't know, 107 of them on the island or something. If your municipal governments disappeared, well, you'd have no police, you'd have no fire, you'd have no roads, you'd have no transit, you'd have no clean water, you'd have no parks, you'd have no rinks, you'd have no recreation facilities. And you'd notice pretty quickly because you'd be dead. Yet, the municipal order of government gets 7 or 8 cents of every tax dollar that's spent. And I have to spend most of my life walking around with my hat out saying, please, sir, can I have some more? And we got to fix it. And I'm not talking about constitutional change, but I'm talking about realigning the ability to have revenue with the order of government that actually delivers the service. It's good sense, it makes sense, but it requires our provincial and federal governments to understand that in some ways their spending power is the only power they have.
Okay. We'll let you go now. Thank you so much. This is the perfect place to plug the 2015 MISC conference, which will be in February on the theme of cities. So maybe we can invite you out for that.
I'd love it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful conference, and happy birthday once again to MISC.